we read Parshas Vayechi, we are reminded of the end of the life of Yaakov Avinu. And as we know, Yaakov Avinu at the end of his life is visited by his children and his grandchildren, and we have the famous story in our Parsha of how he refers to each of them and gives them a bracha. But it always makes me think about end-of-life issues that we are always posed with in our generation as well. And it's a very sensitive and difficult area of life to be dealing with, but it's something that we have to think about how the halacha expects us to act and react when we're faced with the challenging circumstances with end-of-life shilas that we get. So number one, there's a letter from the Stipler that I've always found to be an amusing letter. The Stipler was one of the great gedolim, one of the great tzaddikim who lived in Bnei Brak. And the Stipler has a letter in which he titles it, Im mutal chov laharich chaye hachole. Do we have an obligation to extend and to prolong the life of a sick patient at the end of life? And I think that the general perspective of many in the Jewish community is, of course, you have to extend life at all costs, and you have to do it under all circumstances, and it's something we try to do. After all, the Gemara says, Yafa Shah Achas Betshuva Maisim Tovim Mikol Chaye Olam Haba. We try and get every moment of Olam Hazeh that we can in order to accrue Schusim, in order to be able to perform mitzvos, in order that we should be able to come ultimately the Olam Haba. So what's surprising in this letter is, the Stipler raises the issue. He's responding to somebody who is dealing with an end-of-life shaila, and he says to him as follows, Be'ikar ha'yisod. He says, this assumption that we generally have in many of our communities, De'kal ma'ashe efshe lahari chaye hachole, afilu eino ela lechaye isha. When you know that there's no real chance that this person is going to live, and all you're trying to do is just prolong the person's life and extend it just a little bit, so he says, we all have this notion that srichim la'asos, we have an obligation to do that. And he says, "Emes, the truth is, shagamani shamati bialdusi memra kazu. When I was younger, I also was raised with this idea, and I've heard this concept that we should try and extend as much as possible. However, he says, lo yadati imzehu mi bar samchahu. I don't know if this has any credible source in Chazal or in the Sifrei Halacha. I don't know if it's true, he says. Uve'enai davar zed sarach iyin gadol. He says, the whole assumption, he thinks, is a very troubling one and a very surprising one. And I think when it comes from someone like the Stipler, who's not coming with any political agenda, not with any money criterion involved, and he's just saying the halacha as he feels it is, he says it's a very surprising assumption that many Jewish communities have, that we extend life at all costs, whatever it's going to be, whatever the circumstance is, and he says he doesn't really believe that that is true. So there are major tshuvas that Rav Moshe writes and Rav Shlomo Zalman writes. What is the role of the doctor at the point of life when the patient is really at the end of life? Do we still have to actively continue to treat this person, even if it means that we're going to extend the life? Rav Shlomo Zalman says, absolutely, we have no way that we can pull back, even if it means only pulling back b'sheva al tasa, being inactive. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, you have to do everything you can, even at that time. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a number of tshuvas that he's not so convinced of that reality, and it's not so clear exactly how to deal with these issues, and that's why we need to have somebody who we trust that we can ask these kinds of questions to, because as we know, they are extremely important and very sensitive at the same time.
1977.
Yeah. I'm very glad that you mentioned that, because this summer when I brought Rav Asher Weiss to visit in Camp Simcha, and we were having a discussion with many of the medical professionals there. So they raised some of these questions to him, and they were talking about what is our obligation at certain points along the way. And something that he was very pleased with was a comment that one of the doctors at the time had made, and that is that the doctor had said, it makes a difference whether we are extending life or we're extending death. And he said, personally, I never thought of it that way, but he said, now that you say it, I really appreciate that way of phrasing it, which is exactly what you're saying in the name of Rav Moshe, that again, it comes down to a question, are you extending life? Is the person going to have any quality of life? Or are we only extending the suffering of death and making that be a little more prolonged than it had to be? So this is, as we mentioned, a very sensitive question. But something that is probably more relevant for most of us who are not in the medical field and are not the Rabbanim who are called upon for these questions is that quite often when you have a chola who is suffering and at the very end stages of life, there's a lack of certainty exactly how and what the family should daven for. So we all say Rifa'enu every day in our Shemona Esrei, and the question is, at this stage of life, are we really asking that Hashem should send a refuah to this person who is clearly a terminally ill patient that will not be saved, will not be cured, al pi derech hateva? What exactly should we be davening for? On the one hand, we have the Gemara, which clearly states that one is not allowed to be mispalo for an outright miracle. One is not allowed to daven for a nes. One is not allowed to daven that God should break the regular laws of nature. And therefore, when you have somebody who, al pi derech hateva, now you'll say all medicine is not biderech hateva. Doesn't really make sense that when I take a pill, all of a sudden my headache is going to go away. That's also lemaila me derech hateva. But to our medical understandings, our conventional understandings, we believe that is considered derech hateva. But when you have something which is heroic measures, something which is not going to be the conventional understanding that is going to be the outcome of a patient, so the Gemara says you don't really have a right to daven that a miracle should be performed. It's not really the proper thing to do. If it's a hidden miracle, let's say somebody once asked me, how can you say we're not allowed to daven for a miracle? This girl said, I'm a single woman, I want to get married, and the Gemara says that every time a couple gets married, it's as if Kriyas Yamsuf took place. So you mean to tell me I'm not allowed to daven for a shidduch? Because my getting married means God is performing a miracle that has the proportion of the Kriyas Yamsuf, which was the greatest miracle that the Jewish people ever experienced. So the answer to that is yes. You're not allowed to ask for an overt miracle. However, the last time you went to a wedding that you were invited to, did you feel as the chasen and kala were marching down the aisle like, I'm experiencing Kriyas Yamsuf? We know in the back of our minds, when you really break it down, you say, this is amazing. How did this boy meet this girl? How did they come together? How is this shidduch happening? It's an amazing thing. Some shidduchim are even more surprising than others. But for the most part, we say to ourselves, it's pretty natural. It's pretty normal. I always wonder, you know, sometimes when people get engaged, you hear the girls shrieking on the phone, what? Why is it so surprising that people get engaged? I think many people in the world have gotten engaged and gotten married. So we're very excited, we're very surprised, but the bottom line is we believe this is part of the course of nature. This is not something that is so unusual to us. But somebody did ask me over the summer that they have a major medical handicap, and they said, yes, Rabbi, for me, it is lemaila miderech hateva that anybody will ever marry me. So what am I supposed to daven for? And I was so pained by the question. I don't really know what the answer to such a question is. For example, a couple of years ago, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz had sent me a question to discuss with my father, and it was, there was a family who very unfortunately found out along the way in the pregnancy that their child that they were carrying had Tay-Sachs, which is so unusual that it happens today in our community, but that's what happened. And they asked him, what exactly should we daven for at this stage in the pregnancy? We cannot daven that we should have a healthy child. This child is not going to be healthy. Al pi derech hateva, we already took a test and we found out that the child has some major medical problems that are not going to allow them to have a life that is going to be a healthy life. On the other hand, what should we daven for? So this is a major question that one has to think about, and unfortunately it's one that comes up quite often. And the reason why it's important is because the Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Bikur Cholim, Simen Shin Lamed Hei, that one of the most fundamental aspects of Bikur Cholim is not just going to visit the patient, not just going to provide them with everything they need, not just going and singing for them and making them happy, but one of the most fundamental elements of Bikur Cholim is that you have to offer a tefillah on behalf of the Cholim. In fact, the Ramah quotes in the Dark Emotion the name of the Ramban, I believe, in the Taras HaAdam, that the Ramban tells us, anybody who is Mevaker Chola without offering a tefillah, which so often we do, you go in to visit somebody, you don't think to offer a tefillah, you just talk to them, and whatever it happens to be that needs to be done, you take care of it, and then you leave. Says the Ramban, as quoted in the Ramah, if you don't offer a tefillah before leaving, you have not fulfilled your obligation of Biker Cholim. So this is something that is very important, but does that mean that for every chola that we visit, even when you have a terminally ill patient, you should be offering a tefillah that they should have a refuah shlema? Isn't that davening for a miracle? And the truth is, there's a very controversial, a somewhat troubling, and a very surprising ran in Meseches Nedarim Daf Mem. And this ran is of the opinion that when you have somebody who's at that stage of life, that is suffering so much, and is going through so much turmoil because of the condition that they have, the Ramban argues that at that point you should be mispalo that the person should have a peaceful death. Which again, as we mentioned, is a very surprising comment to the Ramban. To some people it's a very jarring thing to say. How can you daven that someone should die? But at the same token, the Ran argues that this is something that really has sources in Chazal. After all, we have a Gemara Maseches Bab Metzia. So the Gemara tells us there were two very close friends, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. And they were two great Amoraim who interacted with each other all the time. Ultimately, Reish Lakish becomes the brother-in-law of Rabbi Yochanan. And they are always learning and arguing and fighting in a good way, but they became such close friends. And now, one of them passed away. And the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan was so pained, he was so troubled by the fact that Reish Lakish had died, and he said to himself, What am I going to do without this best friend of mine, without this brother-in-law that I grew so much with? I cannot continue on with life. And the Gemara says, Bikshu el Avrahamim Shayamus. They daven for Rabbi Yochanan that he should die. So says the Ran, don't you see that there are circumstances, there are times where we have the ability to actually offer a tefillah that somebody should have a peaceful death. There's a surprising Yerushalmi where the Yerushalmi says that Rabbi Ada bar Ahava gave birth to a son who had a tremendous and very debilitating defect when they were born. And because of this, Rabbi Ada bar Ahava was concerned that he would never have a normal life and he would never be able to live any positive moments in life because he would suffer so much because of the condition that he had. It's not important what it was. But the Yerushalmi says that Rabbi Ada bar Ahava, the father of the child, offered a tefillah that his son should die, which is, again, an amazingly painful statement to say. But at the same time, the Ran collects a number of sources where you do find such a concept. The Gemara says in Moed Katan as well that the story of Amsa de Rebbe, that she offered also a tefillah seemingly that Rebbe should die, which again was a very troubling statement, but that's really what we find in a number of places in Chazal. But the problem is that although the Ran argues this, and although we find it in the Gemara in Moed Katan, the Gemara in Bab Metzia, we have a number of sources that seem to indicate that. You look through the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah, and you will not find this Ran quoted the halacha. Which leads us to question, is this really something that we're allowed to follow or not? You have a very compelling argument by the Ran, where he quotes a number of places where we do find in Chazal such a notion, but at the same time, it is not quoted the halacha in Shulchan Aruch or in the Torah or in the Rambam. So what do we do when we're faced with situations like that? One of the great Svardusha Achronim in the 1800s raised this issue, and he said, unfortunately, he had a situation in his community in which there was a woman who was burnt in a fire. Unfortunately, it's very much on a lot of our minds. We suffered this terrible tragedy last week on Hanukkah. So there was a woman who was suffering terribly, and it said for 20 years she was suffering with her, I don't know, second-degree burns, third-degree burns, terrible burns that she had to live with. She was never able to leave her house. She wasn't able to move around so much. And her family was very graciously taking care of her and doing everything to make her life as positive as possible. Till it came to a point where the woman said to her family, I'd like you to just stop, because I just cannot continue to live on like this. It's too painful, too much Yisurim, it's too tragic for me to continue to be this way and to be alive. And the question that was sent to this great Svardusha Gadol was, should we, as the children of this woman, by her request, should we offer a tefillah that she should no longer be alive, that she should pass away? And that was a major dilemma that they had at the time. And he responded that he said, there is room to argue, maybe we should follow the opinion of the Ran. At the same time, he says he thinks it's highly inappropriate for a family member to do that, because he says, someone might mistakenly interpret your tefillah. Imagine you're davening Shemona Esrei a little bit louder than you're supposed to, and somebody next to you hears, you know, you're davening with all your kavana that the mother should pass away. It's a very uncomfortable thing for people to hear. And therefore, he argues, maybe there's room to say such a tefillah might be something that is acceptable to be offered, but not by the children and the family themselves. It almost looks like they're trying to release themselves from their obligation to take care of the mother. And therefore, he says, one has to be very sensitive and very careful how you apply this round and whether or not it should be applied the halacha. My father is of the opinion that under certain circumstances, when the right situation presents itself, he has told me in the past that he feels it is appropriate to follow the Ran. And when you see somebody is suffering so much, and the doctors have said that they feel kalu kal hakitzim, that there is no opportunity for this person to really be healed up hiderach hateva, he believes that this is something we have a right to be mispalav for, that they should have a peaceful death, and it's something they should not suffer any longer. I'll just close with an amazing story that Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef writes about his own father. So he's now the Rav HaRashi in Eretz Yisrael, and his father was the great Rabbi Avadi Yosef. And he writes the following. He says, Achruni lifnei karov lishloshim shana. He says, I remember, it must have been 30 years ago. By now it's probably 50 or 60 years ago. She'echad agvirim hanechbadim in Geneva. There was a great Svardusha philanthropist in Geneva who owned a bank. And he had what to do with Rabbi Avadi Yosef. And he sent in the following question. That he had echad mipakidei habank shelo. He had one of his employees who fell into a coma for 4 or 5 years, was already suffering from a coma, but lo hakara ketzemach, a complete vegetable, no recognition at all, never woke up in the last 5 years, and the doctors say they have nothing, al pi derech hateva, that they can really provide this patient with. Not only that, ishto nishara aguna, obviously the wife is not able to get remarried because her husband is stuck in the hospital, and they asked Rabbi Avadi Yosef, what should we do for this person? How should we deal with this scenario? Said Rabbi Avadi Yosef, Maran Shlita, he says, my father, and he's writing a personal recollection. He says, my father bikesh me'avreche yeshivasenu chazon avadya. He said, my father came the next day into the Beis Medrash, into his own yeshiva, and he asked, sheyavo asara lebeit hacholim bohu mushpaz. He asked that we gather a minion of Talmidei Chachamim from the yeshiva to come to the hospital and visit this person. V'yispalalu saviv limitasu seder hatfila hanizkeres, and he outlined the tefillah that we should offer when we go to the hospital, kedesha yamus. So he convened a minion in the hospital that this person should die, because he's suffering so much, and the family is suffering, and the woman's in aguna, and he felt that that was a good enough reason to be mispalel, that this person should have the end of their life. Maran atzmo hishtatef imanu be'osa hatfila, he says, my father himself didn't absolve himself of the tefillah. He joined with us. He was the chazan. He was there. He participated. And he says, Hisrakshus gedola achzabana. We were all very startled. How can we offer such a tefillah? What are we supposed to do? How can we say such a thing? But he said, we listened to our father. And he said that this young man who was in this terrible tragedy, achein lo aver zman v'ha'ish niftar lebeis olamo. He says, it was not long. And this person actually passed away. V'chein hutra ha'isha mikavle igunasa, and he says the wife was able to get remarried because now the husband was no longer keeping her in aguna. So again, as we mentioned, these are very sensitive and difficult questions that we don't have to. We pray that we never have to deal with. But unfortunately, these questions do come up more often than we would like them to, and we have to be aware that there are major discussions and sensitive questions that need to be asked even at the very end of life, when one thinks that all you have to do is be compassionate. The question is, what exactly is the compassionate thing to do when someone might be, unfortunately, holding at the very end stages of life?